Welcome to the Film Reroll Fancast, where a group of internet strangers talks about your favorite podcast, The Film Reroll. We'll be going episode by episode, discussing choices made, roles that changed everything, and whatever the heck else we think of during the conversation. We are today talking about both episodes of Raiders of the Lost Ark, parts one and two. That featured Paolo as the GM, John as Indiana Jones, Jaws as Marion Ravenwood, and Peter as Sala Mohammed Faisal Akahir. Today we have Caleb joining us. Do you want to say hello?
Hi. Happy to be here.
And Peter.
Hello. Great to be back.
So happy to have you guys here and talking about this episode. This episode is incredible. They really made a jump from Back to the Future to very much what they ended up becoming, basically, with these two episodes. A lot more kind of chatter from Peter and a little bit more control by the players over their roles.
That was the thing I was going to, because we talked a lot about that with Back to the Future, how Paolo was doing basically all the roles in math kind of on his own for them. And they really gave a lot of that control back to the players on this one, which is nice.
Yeah, I definitely noticed that as well. Like, there was more transparency, I guess, from the part of the GM as to, like, who was rolling for what. Also, a lot of John kind of explaining the different options for combat and things like that. I mean, there was a fair amount of combat in Back to the Future, but it seemed like a lot more combat opportunities, obviously, in Raiders of the Lost Ark. And opportunities for different things. The, you know, telegraphic, all-out, strong attacks and whatnot.
Yeah, the roles got a lot more technical in this one, I think.
We want to kind of go somewhat chronologically, but overall, I think we still see Jaws behaving kind of adversarially, you might say, but in a somewhat more controlled way,
out.
And a bit more, yeah. And I think for the most part,
it's a bit more in character this time.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. For the most part, just kind of channeling the character, really.
Yeah, she was definitely poking the bear, especially there at the end, wanting to open the ark. Just wanting to see what would happen for sure. I just watched Raiders of the Lost Ark last night. Not for the first time, but just to remind myself, because I've listened to these episodes now so many times, I'd forgotten what the actual movie had. So they get rid of, in this reroll, they get rid of both of their main antagonists fairly early on. I mean, especially the German with Paolo's crazy eyes in the bar. And yet they still opened the ark and murdered half of Cairo.
We talked about, you know, that move that Jaws made. We talked about that last time, where there seems to be a point, and I think it holds true for a lot of the movies they've done. She gets to a point where she does what I do in board games, which is like, if I know that I can't win, I'm just going to fuck it up for everybody else. And so, you know, when I was re-listening to it, because we had talked about that before, I was trying to pinpoint where she basically gave up, like on successfully getting out. And I think it's when they get to the ark, but they're being chased by Germans. I think she was basically like, there's no way we're getting out of this with the ark and everybody alive. And so she was like, okay, I know what I need to do. I need to find an excuse to open the ark.
Yeah, I think you're right. That is the point.
I think that's exactly right. And, you know, another thing I noticed as far as like getting rid of the antagonists, it's kind of interesting that there's a lot of small victories, really, when you look at it that way. Like Indy gets the idol and holds onto it in the opening scene that doesn't really connect with the rest of the plot. You know, they kill the doctor in the bar. They get rid of the French archaeologist. And yet the ending of the movie or the ending of the reroll is actually much worse than the movie. Nonetheless.
Mm-hmm. Right. Not worse in terms of, you know, interesting, but in terms of results for the world.
For the world.
I know they talked very briefly at the end what it might mean, but I know someone sent in a fan letter where they fleshed out like what happens with that happening. And it was pretty, it was pretty interesting.
Right. Have you read that one?
I haven't.
They were saying they were going to post it somewhere, but I don't know where it is.
Yeah, I haven't read it. They kind of briefly went through it on air.
Right. Yeah, it was very interesting, and I wanted to. I've been wanting to find it, and I just haven't quite gotten to that yet. I did find the kill sheet, though.
Ah.
Yeah, the person who put together the kill sheet and posted it on Reddit, unfortunately, they only kept it up through Jumanji. So if anybody wants to do that,
And then I'm trying to think. I mean, up through Jumanji, you get the bulk of their mass kills are up until Jumanji. After that, they tend to be somewhat more reserved, I think, in the amount of mass destruction they cause.
It does seem that way. The kill sheet did not have Cairo. It did not have the universe. It did have the sand, the little bits of sand fainting from Jumanji that Peter went and kicked the sand, I guess. But yeah, it hasn't been kept up really. So
I'm wrong because E.T. came after Jumanji, and E.T. where they blow up the moon. Spoiler alert.
Right. <It's> like,
I assume if anyone's listening to this podcast, they've listened to all these episodes as much as we have.
Exactly.
I would hope so. Yeah.
I can't imagine that anyone wouldn't have. Okay. The one thing I noticed in the cold open, I did not know that Alfred Molina played Satipo. So that was incredible. I was really glad that was pointed out during the reroll. Also, their cold open, the time that it took them was about like 19 minutes, which is about the same amount of time for the movie itself. It's apparently about 10 minutes for Andy to come flying out of the temple with the huge stone rolling behind him. And then just that little bit extra from getting the idol taken away to getting to the plane is just a couple more minutes. Mm-hmm. So they were about the same amount of time, maybe a little bit longer than the movie itself's cold opening. Although it came That's out really very, very differently, because John was able to keep the idol, and they did
the escape was a lot more dignified.
Yeah, definitely.
I mean, he whipped Balak in the face and kind of got away with the idol, which is, you know, certainly more dignified than losing the idol and escaping and barely making it to the plane. I was wondering, I mean, we talked, I think, last time about like small things that could have really changed how the reroll went. I mean, Satipo almost made it out of the temple. I mean, he crit failed at a different part than Satipo in the actual movie does, but I wonder how that would have played out. I mean, would they have just abandoned the character of Satipo, or would Indy have brought Satipo with him to Cairo as like a former adventuring companion?
Oh, interesting. Maybe, but I feel like maybe Satipo was maybe more specialized to South America.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, that's what I wonder. I wonder if Paolo would have just been like, whatever, Satipo can't go. Sorry. You know.
Yeah, and also if Satipo would have done something, like had he made it out, would he have just betrayed Indy and sided with New York or something like that?
True.
That's true. There's some good firsts or like big iconic moments that we talked about last time about, like things that became like tropes later on that come from here. We get into it. I mean, obviously, Sever the Spinal Column is from this, which has become like one of the biggest running jokes throughout the entire series, which is, again, this just insane Jaws bloodthirstiness that comes really out of nowhere at that point. She's had very little interaction with anybody, and all of a sudden she's like, yeah, I want to drive the bottle through his neck and sever the spinal column.
I totally forgotten this is where it comes from. Like, I just assumed it was something later, I guess. And I like that it was pretty much immediately followed up by John saying, you know, no, you don't want the penalty that you'd get for targeting the neck. No.
Right. Only able to talk her out of it just because of the points that would be added on for something more difficult.
Yeah. And I think she still ended up just failing that role because she just wanted to attack in general. She still ended up failing the role. I mean, Jaws is like fully bloodthirsty through the entire movie. I was re-listening to even just put like part two. I mean, there's obviously the bar fight, which she keeps trying to like keep going without letting it end.
Yes.
And then, but then she gets even
Why
in the
are
second
they attacking
one,
me?
When they fight
oh,
the,
well, let's keep it going then.
Yeah. Right. And then when they're fighting the Nazis on the hill before they go in, instead of just hiding in the hole, which was what, you know, she was kind of like asked to do. She was like, no, I'm going to just attack people with a knife. She kills like two of the Nazis herself with the knife.
Yeah, Marion becomes a super badass. She is a badass in the movie itself. For 1981 and so forth, you know, Karen Allen was basically one of the badasses of film for women for the time period. And you know that if you see Karen Allen in a movie, somebody's going to get punched or shot.
Their spinal column severed.
Possibly. Possibly.
Yeah, she had a lot. She had a lot more to work with Marion than she did with Jennifer.
Definitely ramps it up.
Yeah, always.
Which is a lot of fun for sure. And I don't have as big of a problem with that in this particular one as in Back to the Future. Really, not that I have too much of a problem with it in Back to the Future.
Yeah,
you know,
it's always funny, I mean, and it's always enjoyable. Fun. But it's definitely more thematically appropriate.
Absolutely. And I really wish I could have seen Crazy Eyes Kuros, you know? Like, I really wish I could have seen that. I wish that that was on video.
Yes.
Doing the German
Dropped his someone dropped his acting reel, like his dramatic and his comedic acting reels, in the subreddit recently. And oh, yeah. I do feel like you get a sense of his crazy eyes in the in both of them, actually. Like, he does some stuff and it's like, oh, okay, that's what it is. Nice.
Yes, I watched that, and it's really worth watching, I think, for any fans to actually see Paolo in person. Kind of along those lines, I did want to point out before I forget that I think this is the first appearance of the Paolo sexy voice, as I would refer to it, when he is trying to tempt Indy into opening the chest at the end. Indiana says, like, well, I have intuition, I have a feeling that'd be a bad idea. He's like, oh, you don't think that'd be a bad idea. You think it'd be a really good idea. You want to open the chest. And he just turns on the similar voice to, like, the cat in Wizard of Oz, I think, that kind of, like, smooth, spooky voice that he does. Just, like, part of high-end acting chops, I'd say.
Yeah, the sexy voice, a.k.a. the I'm trying to trick you into doing something you probably shouldn't do because it'll be hilarious voice.
I gotta say, it's a very good voice. Sexy or temptation.
Yeah, agreed. Really.
It's a very good voice. I don't know where we are in the movie anymore. That they say at some point the Ark has phenomenal power, and I immediately think to myself every time, in an itty bitty living space.
Yeah.
I cannot. Anytime I hear phenomenal power, itty bitty living space.
Yeah, I have to think if they had done this movie way later, especially after Aladdin, I could see them just having that happen. Like, assuming that they're not going to open the Ark at any point, but if they do, it turns out that it's just the genie inside.
I want that now.
One thing I was thinking of when they're trying to escape through the tunnels and they come into, like, a kind of mirror chamber that also has a pedestal with a chest on it. I had completely forgotten about that until I re-listened to it, and I was like, oh, is that where the One Ring is? You know, and I don't recall when Paolo said he started hiding the One Ring, but it seems like doing it at this time, there had to be some side chamber or something where the One Ring would be hidden.
Yeah, I forget.
The One Ring was mentioned.
I think it was Wizard of Oz, maybe.
During Wizard of Oz, yeah.
Yeah.
By Peter, and that's when, I think after Wizard of Oz is where he started hiding it.
Because Paolo joked that he was going to start just hiding it everywhere.
And I think he was certainly hiding. He has said that he hides other random things throughout the worlds of, you know, he has been doing that throughout these movies, but they never.
I mean, yeah, they clearly found something. They found something in The Rock. They like failed every IQ check to figure out what it was. And it was like some cylinder. So I always think about that, like, what sci-fi or fantasy object did they find that they just couldn't figure out what it was?
Oh, from the guy with the wolf?
Yeah. The guy with the wolf had some cylinder, and they kept asking him what it was, and he wouldn't tell them. So, I'm curious what kinds of crazy sci-fi nonsense or fantasy nonsense he's hidden that they've just never found.
I know, but I assume that he's just reusing that stuff, and
maybe
we'll find out eventually, or have come across it in other things.
I do wonder if there was anything in that second chest, or if it was only meant to try and trap somebody into getting crushed. Because the Hans, the German guy, ended up squished. So I wonder if they had found a way to disarm that, if there was actually anything there, or if it was only there as literally just a trap to try and kill one of them.
Right.
I thought that was the way out. Like, that box was the tunnel to get out. Was like a tunnel to get out.
Yeah, they did open it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and then there was another path leading down.
That's right. There was stairs down. Okay.
I do want to talk about a little bit. Peter mentioning Asperger's. It was just a one-off little joke about. John, I think in the bar where Jaws was like, oh, interesting, they don't want to hurt their friends, you know, kill their friends. What, do you have Asperger's? And I just want to throw out a little bit of information about the term Asperger's. It comes from, it's the name of the doctor who was like doing research on it. Unfortunately, he wasn't all that wonderful of a person. So technically speaking, it's not a diagnosis anymore. The DSM-5 mm-hmm. no longer includes it as a thing, but culturally speaking, like, I mean, we know it as Asperger's, but it has
been autism spectrum disorder.
Autism.
I mean, especially if you think about
there's like something that I think kind of equates to it, but yeah, he was actually Asperger was kind of a Nazi. So, you know, that's the reason why it was removed.
Well, it's funny because I think they re-bring up this idea of the idea of that level of autism spectrum disorder and how GURPS kind of helps could help like personify that, because they even joke like it could be a disadvantage and an advantage depending on like what's going on. And they later talk about like, because I think when John was talking about like falling in love or not, and it was this very like, you have to check these, you know, all this stuff. And they were like, I could see it helping someone actually like process their day-to-day life if they think of it in those terms.
Right. Peter, I do remember in a later episode, Peter does go into a little bit of a discussion about that. And I think that GURPS very probably can. I've never played GURPS. I've never even looked at the rules, but it does seem like it does handle a lot of social situations from what I'm hearing on the film reroll that, you know, it could help somebody kind of acknowledge, oh yeah, you know what, if I wait and assess the situation, I do learn more and how to react to something.
Yeah, it's broken down in much greater detail than a lot of other role-playing systems. You know, I mean, like with like D&D, it's kind of like roll charisma. You know, it's just that, which there is still, you can still just do in GURPS. You can kind of just roll that stuff. But GURPS has the ability to just create any kind of specific ability within that. And, you know, you really get into some real nitty-gritty, crunchy numbers.
Right. Yeah, they don't do a ton of crunchiness. At least we don't hear the crunchiness on the podcast, which I really appreciate, honestly.
I think my hat tip to Paulo and Tim. I don't know when he starts working on it, but you know, I've played a lot of GURPS. I've GM'd GURPS, and for some of the stuff that they do on there and model on there, I mean, I think they actually put a lot of work into it that's all front loaded, so that by the time the characters get their sheets and everything, it all just rolls smoothly from there. You know, GURPS is very powerful in that way, and I love it, but it's a lot of work on the GM.
That's interesting. I would love to learn more about GURPS. I don't know if you're ready for that whole conversation, though. So.
It's nice because it is powerful in that way, but it's also, you can dumb it down to like a really simple level, which is, again, is why GURPS is so great. And I think why they chose to use it for the reroll is it could be as simple as you want to make it, and it can become as complex as they need to make it for how the show works.
Right. Yeah. They weren't using bleeding rules, I remember.
Right.
Yeah.
When Indy got shot near the end.
Yeah. Which I think they mentioned that in Jaws, specifically about Indiana Jones walking around for the second half of the movie, got shot.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. I forgot that they mentioned it in Jaws, but that was one thing I noticed near the end. I was like, oh yeah, he got gut shot, and I don't think he really got bandaged up properly. I mean, he wouldn't have had a chance to really get properly bandaged up from that.
And then he buried himself in the sand. Finally. Definitely going to get infected.
I think if they had just buried themselves in the sand, they would have gotten away clean. I mean, there was only like the one guy who showed up to take a piss, and then the only reason the other guys came closer was because they saw him having the altercation with John, or with Peter, I think. No, it was with John. And if they had just buried themselves in the sand, like Peter said, and it's not that I'm biased, because my name's also Peter, but I think Peter had a really good idea there, and I think they should have done it.
I think he had a great idea. I really do.
Everyone scoffed at it, like it was so dumb, and upon re-listening it, I was like, they should have buried themselves in the sand.
It actually seemed like a very good idea. I mean, burying yourself in the sand, or were they able to get into the pit at that point? Or had they dug yet?
They had, but they were snakes, and they hadn't quite solved that problem. Oh, or they had thrown like one torch in, and it didn't work, and Sala got bit.
Yeah,
that was
the
even at 1.5 times speed, that was a long discussion over whether or not the torch would go out,
or whether to burn the snakes with kerosene.
In the movie, it's just drop.
Just drop the torch.
Just do it. Just do it. The movie told me that it'd be fine. Just do it.
And then you get that other moment where Jaws is going to shoot the snakes.
Right.
It's just like, you don't have shooting skill.
Away.
Yeah, you don't have shooting skill, and there's hundreds of snakes, and you have, what, five shots?
Right, you don't want to waste your bullets on snakes when there's a possibility of Nazis.
Yeah.
Yeah, especially when you're shooting right past your front. You know, like, no. He's a much larger thing to avoid than the snakes are to hit.
The crit fail from Sala on his leadership for as much as Peter hates it, the Dig Boys, which I dislike. Like, once he said that he didn't like it, everyone started using that term.
I know.
But yeah, the crit fail of that moment was... There's so many,
because they didn't have any antagonist, really. I mean, beyond the snakes,
yeah,
they really had no real worries. I mean, the biggest time clock kind of thing that they were on was that somebody might find Belloc.
Mm-hmm. And even if they did, it's kind of like Belloc doesn't know where they are.
It's hard to say whether or not he would survive.
But it's like, I mean, there's so many in every movie. There's so many crit fails and crit successes that are important and are fun. But like that one was so. I mean, that one really was like the turning point because they were doing really well. Like, I mean, they had the whole team there. They found the Ark. They were working on how to deal with the snakes. And then they lost like their 15 guys that were there helping them, except for Jeremy. Jeremy right. got his own role and he stayed and ended up probably saving Sala's life.
Right. Also, just to throw in another quick fact, since this is also kind of a fact-laden episode, don't ever suck venom out of a snake bite.
Yeah.
Don't do that. That is not how you handle that these days.
Yeah. Well, that's like the cut the X on it and then suck it out. And it's like,
right.
No.
Yeah, no. Not today. No. You take that person straight to a hospital and try to make note of what the snake looks like. And most of the time, it's not even a venomous bite. Usually, like, it's a dry bite, they call it, where the snake hasn't actually used its venom. It's just trying to get you to go away. But no, still, don't. You'll just infect things. It'll make things worse. Just don't do that. They did used to do it.
They did.
Like, in the 1800s and before anti-venom became a thing, they did do that, and it wasn't always successful. They also had people drink brandy, and they poured ammonia into the snake bite. Like, they opened it up more and poured ammonia into it to try to neutralize the venom. Like, they did a whole lot of crazy things in the 1800s.
We used to do a lot of weird shit.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean,
but yeah, this is
probably going to die anyway. Let's try this.
Yeah. But, like, speaking of the fact-laden episode thing, they really did, especially when they got to where the Ark was. They had this whole... They had a whole bunch of stuff where they opened it up and they talked about for like a couple of minutes about Ra and Amun versus Amun-Ra. Like, they dropped a lot of actual knowledge about Egyptian, you know, religion and history.
Yes, and pine cones.
And pine cones. And and pinion points.
Yes.
Oh gosh, yeah. The Jaws looking for pinion points, I thought, was a pretty good Jaws moment where she's a bit more concerned with what she as the player knows and what kind of problem solving she can do for the situation rather than what skills she actually has as a character. Yeah.
Called out pretty quickly by John too. He was just like, do you have climbing skill? No. Then you don't know shit about pinion points. Right. Which unlike someone, cause everyone does this at some point during the whole series of this game, but she actually sometimes fights it when she gets called on that. But this one, she was like, yeah, that's fair. I wouldn't know anything about this.
Yeah, although she
did
bring
up that she lived in Tibet.
This is probably one she could argue against because she lived in Nepal, and there's a lot of climbing around there.
Yeah.
She gave up on that one too easily, I think.
I think so too. Mm-hmm. I think she could have looked for pinion points. There probably weren't any.
Yeah.
Because this was, you know, a place that nobody had found for thousands of years, but you know, you never know, maybe.
Yeah, I think that might be a GM fail. She should have had a point in climbing, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I think she really should have had at least, a point, for sure. I don't know how GURPS works at all. So 1 point sounds good. There were a lot of change because of their eliminating their two major antagonists. There were a lot of other things from the movie that did not occur during this reroll, like the guy with the monkey. Like, the monkey showed up, stayed with Marion for, I think, the entire time. I don't know if
she
helped the monkey keep its eyes closed or not. But, you know, but the guy from the movie whose monkey it was, who, you know, he had trained and so forth, like, he never showed up. The swordsman, you know, for that non-sword fight, he was never quite there. you know, there were a whole bunch of people working with the Germans in Cairo, who like where the where Marion gets kidnapped and put in a basket and Indy can't find her. Mm-hmm. And then a whole bunch of baskets, and that he assumes that she is in that truck that gets blows up.
Right.
You know, that whole thing, none of that happens. They stuck together for one thing. And whatever was supposed to happen, where there was that little fight where she managed to, where she is kidnapped from him, you know, from him during that fight, never quite happened.
Yeah. Well, I know, because when they went through the old lady's house and they were being chased, I mean, I think Paola was kind of trying to lead them to some of those moments, like the sword fight and her potentially getting captured. But like John turned around and took a shot and randomly hit the guy in the heart. I think that really kind of put the kibosh on like the chase.
True.
So then they basically got away, and then Sala managed to get away after knocking his two people out. So, I mean, it did feel like Paola was trying to lead to some of those iconic moments, but just in the way that it all works, like they just got away. But then what was strange to me in that is that when they went to then wait at the cafe, I was surprised that he had Belloc confront them personally rather than just have more goons show up. That was kind of an interesting, and I wonder if he rolled for it, you know, off mic or something, you know, what how patient would Belloc be about that.
Sure. In the movie Indy is kind of brought to Belloc to basically have that conversation.
Yeah.
And that's at a point where he thinks that Marianne is dead and he's been drinking and so forth. And that's when the kids kind of go in and kind of rescue Uncle Indy from that space.
Right.
So they had that conversation, but it is kind of surprising a little bit that Belloc approached them rather than having someone approaching, you know, having them brought to him. I guess.
Yeah. One thing I wanted to say about that cafe scene, that now that you mention it, that I was thinking about when I was re-listening to it, is I think that's a neat example of kind of one of those, at least in my experience, an RPG trope kind of making its way into the show where, oh, we'll get the person drunk and seduce them, basically. And it worked for them. I mean, it was an interesting way to resolve that whole scene, really. And then, you know, allows them to carry him out into the desert and tie him up.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they take that, because that happens later when he's torturing her, basically. She tries to get him drunk. So I think it was an interesting way for them to just lift that scene out and drop it in somewhere else. Because it is a great scene with Belloc getting drunk with Marion.
Yeah.
Yes.
So, and I would say that it would almost seem like meta knowledge, except that the introduction to Marion's character is playing shot for shot with someone, you know, doing that. So it still works, even if they're taking away movie knowledge. There's still this idea that that's how she gets herself out of trouble, is being able to do that.
Absolutely. Yeah. Another thing that you mentioned that I, for some reason, when I was listening to it, it just did not occur to me, but what happened with the monkey? They just sort of, you know, she was trying to get the monkey off her back for a bit, and then they just sort of, I think, forgot about it. And now that I'm thinking about it, hopefully the monkey was able to hide its eyes, you know?
It got mentioned once during the chase that the monkey is still on your back. And I think once in the desert, they asked if the monkey was still there and he said yes. And then I think they just forgot to talk about it again.
Yes, I think so too.
It would not be the first time a character's gotten basically forgotten.
Right.
And I'm kind of trying to think if there's any way the monkey could have come in handy, but I'm not sure.
Yeah. No, it did. I think she asked if the monkey, when they were fighting the Nazis outside of the chamber, I think that was when the last time she asked about it, and can the monkey yell or something? Again, like I'm like right there in my re-listen, I feel like the monkey yelled or did something to try and distract one of the Nazis.
Yeah. Or just throw the monkey at the Nazi. You know.
Oh, no.
Probably effective.
Yeah. It would distract me. I'd probably draw my weapon.
I would not want a monkey coming at me. No capuchin monkeys being thrown. Please.
Well, especially if it could just be Peter as Abu monkey.
Oh, yes. That would be...
Rolling HT to poop on command.
And they did say that was the backup character if Sala died, so
yeah. I like to think that that's where John got the idea of making Peter be Abu in Aladdin.
Oh yeah.
I thought it was just to keep Peter from talking too much.
It could be two things. So the one thing that I found really fun, speaking of Peter, that I found really engaging and really I think is a good way to like sell people on the premise of the podcast is right after that bar scene when they're drunk and they're dragging unconscious Belloc to Sala's house. And he, Peter even mentions, he's like, in and out of character, like, I don't know what to do in this situation. Like, I obviously want to help them, but if I do, I'm putting my family at risk. And like that moment of like true indecision, both in and out of character, was really like endearing and engaging to me for Sala as a character and for Peter as an actor.
Agreed.
Absolutely. I think that was a, like very inhabiting the character and trying to make the decision in that moment. And yeah, you know, Jaws was really trying to threaten him and talk him out of it. But I mean, I think that makes perfect sense. Sala's going to be like, no, you're not coming into my house.
Yeah.
Right. The knocking. Sala. Sala. Yeah, absolutely. That was a huge moment. I mean, even for me to, you know, as I was listening to it too, like, what will he do? What would he do? What would I do? Mm-hmm. You know, if I knew that I had two impulsive people, two impulsive friends with the enemy standing at my door.
The enemy who's also your boss, ostensibly.
Yeah. And he's also your boss on, you know, your dig. Like, and you know that there are tons of people watching what is happening all around Cairo at that moment. Like, oh yeah, no, you're not coming in here. See me turn you away. That's fine. So I guess that Paolo had to come up with a contact for Sala real quick to.
I think that was the resolution. Is he decided to roll contacts and see if he had anywhere to send them.
Right.
Which, I mean, gosh, I mean, imagine if that had just been like a failed roll, or if, because I mean, that's almost like it, when they got to the airport later and he rolled contacts and rolled poorly, which then brought all the attention on them. I mean, what if that had been flipped? What if he rolled worse then? I mean,
yeah, where would he send him to there?
Like, then it really does become Sala and the Raiders of the Lost Ark.
True. Sala against, because it would be Sala against Belloc, I guess. At that point.
Yeah. Then it would be whether it's worthwhile to try to rescue Indy and Marion or let them try to figure their own way out.
Or if they even could be rescued at that point too. Hard to say. Belloc was kind of creepy. I should not say kind of creepy. He was definitely creepy in the movie with Marion, for sure.
But it's funny, I think if they had gotten captured, and it seems to play that way in the movie too, is just kind of like if they get captured, Belloc actually lobbies to not kill them. Because I think for all of his faults, like, Belloc appreciates Indy just like as a fellow archaeologist, you know, kind of guy. But so I don't know. Yeah, if they got captured, would he be able to talk the Nazis out of just executing them immediately?
In the movie itself, he did manage to. Would John be able to roll that well?
Mm-hmm.
To do the same.
Yeah, I think just to some extent with like an Indiana Jones movie, I don't know if it would be on the character. I know he has like luck, but like if like serendipity, like in Oh Brother, Where Art Thou or something like that, like there, you have to give Indy at least a couple of chances. Like if he's getting captured, he's going to get tied up somewhere at worst, you know, like in Last Crusade, you know, you've got to give him a couple of chances to escape on his own, if not to have someone swoop in.
Yeah, the genre appropriate.
For sure.
Yes,
yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah. And they talk a lot about like genre appropriateness in roles. Like, I mean, Paolo complained that they were getting so lucky with their roles, but they'd mentioned like actually it's pretty genre appropriate because that's what happens in these, you know, that's going to be hard for Paolo to balance because obviously the premise of the show is they don't have plot armor. It's totally random. Right. But at the same time, you know, you don't want to have a thing where your main character dies in the first scene. So you know, as the GM, he probably still does build in a lot of, not necessarily plot armor, but you have to build in a lot of escape routes, so to speak, from every potential encounter.
John used a luck. I don't know how much luck he would have had, like if he only had one luck point, you think?
What did he use luck on? I forgot.
It was early. I think it was in the cold open.
I think I want to say he might have used it on a whip roll maybe to swing over the chasm, but I'm not sure.
I think he used it for the traps, the poison dart traps. I think he got hit by one and decided to use luck on that. Which seems really early to be using a luck. So maybe he had several and just never used them again. But
true, I don't know. How many would you give Caleb? How many lucks would you give Indiana Jones?
Well, I think like you want three at least three instances to be able to reroll something, I think. Mm-hmm. If you're playing like a cinematic style action adventure, especially, you know, some of the risks that you take as Indy. Like, I mean, one thing I was thinking in the cold open, I mean, when he has to swing over the chasm with the whip, like, you know, a crit fail on that roll, like, what do you do as the GM? You don't want it to end there.
Yeah.
But, you know, what, I guess maybe it turns out you can...
Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Yeah, right. It's a
Raiders of the Lost Ark. Really good. You never know.
Yeah, Satipo, yeah. Marion, and Sala.
Yeah.
I mean, they would have had to got Marion no matter what, because she's the one that had the piece that told them how to get to the Ark in the first place.
Mm-hmm. It does beg the question: Have they ever done a movie and had something like that happen? Like, and that just, you know, obviously it took 5 minutes and so they never released it. Or maybe it happened and they just said, let's start again and not have that happen. You know, I mean, we know that they've done entire movies that they haven't released, like Die Hard. But I wonder how many they've started and had something go wrong right away and either just not release it or just start again and redo it.
Yeah.
I feel like they would stick to the premise of their show. You know, the main character could absolutely die 5 minutes in. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we just figure out how to work from there. But I do know that, yeah, obviously, like Die Hard, very famously, is one that they have never released and I assume will never release because it's just not entertaining. Mm-hmm. You know, it's possible, but, you know, maybe it's just they've gotten to a point, you know, where they just didn't know quite where to go from there, so then they had to shelve it for a little while, perhaps. Or
that's true. Yeah, I mean,
something along those lines, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it could just be also. I mean, I think they've done a pretty good job of, in the way that the movies are laid out, like what they choose to start with tends to be pretty low stakes a lot of time. I mean, this would be a big exception. Like right away, it's, you know, within the first couple of minutes, he's fighting Belloc with his whip, and he had to go through all the traps and stuff, but. I feel like there's usually a pretty good lead up to any real conflict that could just end it.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm trying to think of some instances. I mean, there's definitely instances where the movies go off the rail, but not necessarily obviously not in a way that it just ends the game. Mm-hmm. The closest.
Yeah. I was gonna say Speed would be the biggest example. Yeah. Right.
Yes.
It's a pretty long episode for that. You know, yeah. It was a pretty long episode for their cold open basically. And they did, you know, very famously it, finished and they had a decent ending with it where they never got to the bus.
poor Jaws,
right?
Yeah,
I'm still waiting for that bus
for how long before I don't get to play? What?
Well, I actually just re-listened to that episode recently, and we don't want to do what we did with Back to the Future and talk about every other episode except Back to the Future, but
I know, right?
It was pretty funny re-listening to Speed and hearing her chime in every now and again for the first like 20 minutes. And then clearly she just got up and like went to a different room to hang out while they did it. Yeah. Cause then she just suddenly is not talking at all. And you're like, oh, she must've just literally been like, whatever, call me when it's ready.
Right. This one, I don't know which episode now, but in one of these, like it was taking her forever to peel that hard boiled egg that apparently she was eating.
I peel another piece of shell.
Yes.
Yeah. That was this episode. Yeah. Oh, you know, one thing where I think they did at least kind of come, it's similar to the idea of, you know, something kind of ending before it can begin, but they structured the episode to where it didn't matter, was James Bond, where they did like three James Bond movies. You know, most of those ended catastrophically for James Bond. It was just way too much danger.
which I liked. I thought that was a funny concept of exactly kind of what we're talking about. Like if that's the premise of the show and you're going to be just brutal with the dice and everything, like that's what's going to happen, especially with these big action movies. Like there was a real chance that Indy wouldn't have made it out of the temple in the first scene.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just a few bad roles, even with three luck, you know,
how do you, if Indy dies in that cold open before or after he gets the idol kind of doesn't matter. But if he dies, what happens next? How do you
Indy's get twin brother
to learn about
Jim D.
Yeah, Illinois Jones.
Yeah, that's even better. Illinois Jones.
Illinois Jones shows up.
And can you call me Indiana just in honor of my brother?
Right.
You take the beer fest route, just replace him with the same actor and have him call him the same name.
Oh my goodness.
You know, one thing, I don't know if this is too much of a topic switch, but one thing that was kind of puzzling me a little bit, and I'm interested to hear your all's take on, is why exactly, like, what was it that made the big difference in the effect that the Ark had from the movie to this? Is it the amount of time that the Ark stayed open or the proximity to Cairo? You know, because, I mean, the Ark does open in the movie and all the light comes out, but it seems to all be localized to that area.
I think it's proximity. I think because in the movie, they trek quite a ways out into the middle of nowhere before they open it. So mm-hmm. I agree. I had the same thought. I was wondering about that, but I think it's purely proximity. Mm-hmm. I think it has a fairly large area of effect, but I think they just, in the movie, they were way, way, way out in the middle of the desert.
Okay. They were on an island in a cave. That's when they opened it.
Right. Yeah.
So,
yeah.
There were a lot of Klieg lights around. I thought that was sky behind Indy and Marion, but apparently it was just blue over that way from the lights. So they were inside of a cave and they had taken a boat to, I don't know what island. Nothing was labeled on the Indiana mm-hmm. Jones map, like within the movie itself, but it was like kind of off of what we assumed was Crete when my partner and I were watching it.
Okay.
They do the classic like map shot with like the
right, that's the red right. lines.
Yes. So it must just be by proximity, I think.
Okay.
There is precedent for them. I mean, after this, but like them kind of changing the way things mechanically work in universe, you know, just because they can. I mean, the way Alien works is not the way it functions in the movie. So I mean, it could be that he just decided it would be different because of where they opened it, but. My guess is just that just by range.
Okay, yeah. That makes a lot more sense. It had been a while since I saw it, and I just couldn't remember. Definitely, if it's in a cave on an island, you know, that makes a lot of sense.
Did they, at the very end of the reroll, did they still get the Ark, and did it still go to Warehouse 13?
It belongs in a museum.
Well,
I think they decided wherever you put the Ark is now officially a museum by default.
Yes, Jeremy deserves it.
Put it in Jeremy's house. I assume they took it with them. I think, you know, at the end, they carried it into town until they found a vehicle that worked. And that was the end.
Okay, yeah, we didn't get that scene, though, of where it ends up. Like, does it go to the warehouse? You know,
men. Yeah, we didn't get the top. We didn't get the top men line. Yeah. I did remember another first. The first time I think this really became relevant was was in this one, which is Jaws always thinking that it's her turn, which is an ongoing thing. And I think this was because she really didn't get into any combat in Back to the Future. I think Peter asked to be put in combat time when he was trying to solve the paradox issues so he could actually act. But I don't think there was combat. And this is the first time where in the fight in the bar, Jaws just kept trying to like string together three or four actions all together. Like, it's not your turn. You got to wait.
Oh, yeah. I loved it. I think you're right. This is the first time and it's just classic Jaws by now.
Yeah. I think eventually she does start to, I mean, just by osmosis, you start to pick up more of the rules. Like, because I think both Jaws and Peter were not familiar at all with GURPS when they first started doing these. It seems like it was pretty much just Paolo and John who knew what was happening. But over time, you can hear them always have these epiphanies like, oh, I just looked up the rules and you could do blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, they do. They discuss that in a later episode, too, where Paolo, I think Jaws said something about learning that she could wait.
Yeah.
And Paolo explains that she was looking up the rules of GURPS, and Peter's like, oh, how dare
Betrayal.
You?
Betrayal. Yeah.
And she had learned by that point about the way turns work in GURPS and other RPGs. I don't know how GURPS turns since we have a GM of GURPS here, Caleb. How does it work?
Oh, so yeah. I mean, GURPS turns like D&D, you know, officially a turn is like 6 seconds. A GURPS turn is 1 second. And so you're much more limited. You can move, take an action like an attack or readying a weapon, something along those lines. If you move and attack like you would in D&D, you attack at a penalty. And it can get a lot more fine-grained than if you do things like all-out attacks. So that's where you sacrifice any ability to take a defense if you're attacked during the opponent's turn. But if you all-out attack, you can, you know, do things like make a stronger attack. Like, so you're just going all out either to get a bonus to hit the other person or get a bonus to damage, or so that you can move and attack. There's one nifty thing when you're running GURPS, they have on their website a set of what's called combat cards, where they print every possible move onto like a set of cards that you can print out. So you have them on the table and players can actually look at all the different options. But in general, unless you're wanting to take some kind of penalty, it's like move, take some kind of short action, or wait, or focus on defense.
Okay. Because hearing Peter, you know, in that bar scene, you know, describing, like, it's really funny. And it really is really funny to hear Jaws, you know, severing the spinal column, all these other actions. And then John, I take another turn to aim.
Yes.
You know, like, I understand that each takes 1 second for each turn, but
And it also, it gets a little funky when you're doing movies because it's so cinematic and they're talking through the whole thing. So the idea that it's 1 second turns, it doesn't like hold up to narrative scrutiny, but it's, I mean, functionally how it works. But it is. I mean, they're talking through the whole thing. But talking's a free action, so.
Right. Yeah, you can absolutely talk.
Well, I would say combat in GURPS is one of the things that, like, it's kind of a double-edged sword. If you're doing the tactical combat rules that are done in the book, a lot of people will find ways to kind of trim it down and try to speed things up. But it's great because there's so many options. Like, in a game like D&D or something, you might have to have a feat to do something like a power attack where you get a bonus to your damage, but you sacrifice something else. In GURPS, anyone can do it. And you can do things like aim your attacks at specific body parts to get specific effects. But combat often can take a very long time because of that, as we see, you know, in the bars.
Yeah. I mean, that happens in other RPGs too, for sure. It does take a long time to do what ends up being just like a maybe 2 minute fight. It can take 2 hours to roll through, certainly in D&D. Just when the action gets good, everything slows down. You know, like that's sometimes how it, when I'm listening to like a different RPG podcast and things, because they're really doing those, you know, they're trying to be more, they're trying to show off the game, I guess, is where I'm going. They're kind of trying to show off how it works and everything. They're not being quite as, in a way, I guess, you know, cinematic or entertainment based as the film Reroll really is, where they're kind of probably cutting out a lot of things like, is there initiative? Like, are there initiative roles in GURPS?
This is basic speed, I think, right? You just always have the same basic speed and hope that you're faster than others.
It's just a stat on your sheet, and it's just a comparison of who has the higher speed. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I mean, I think the closest thing is if you get the drop on someone, you can get a surprise round, which is, I guess, the same as D&D, but like that's the closest thing to like initiative, really.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I got to play GURPS at some point. I'm getting really interested in it now.
I mean, one thing, I guess, for like listeners, too, who haven't played it, I will say on the sjgames.com, on their website, they have a set of a light version of the rules that are free. So that's something like if someone, even if you're not going to play it, just if someone wanted to look at that, you'd get a pretty good idea of all of the things that they're talking about in the show and to see how the rules work.
It is great. It actually, it was really helpful in understanding some of what was going on. Especially early on when they weren't really explaining it, when they were like, even in this one, they obviously got a lot more technical on the way combat worked, but they didn't necessarily explain how it works. It's just you start hearing those words like all out and, you know, determined and that stuff. But I think it takes still another movie or two before they kind of really explain on mic what those things mean.
True.
So it definitely was helpful looking at those light versions just to understand a little bit what's happening in game.
Yeah. Back to Indiana Jones, real quick. quick question. Does Indiana, in the movie, straight up murder anybody?
The sword guy. Yeah.
The sword guy.
I mean, I guess that's technically self-defense. But I mean, he straight up just shoots that guy right in the chest, like, without...
Yeah.
True.
I don't know if you'd call it in cold blood exactly, but you know, he doesn't care about having to fight.
No, I don't think we ever see him do anything comparable to what John was going to try to do to Belloc in the restaurant, in the cafe. Like, I don't think so. I think they're correct on that, like that would have been a little out of character to just stab him while he was passed out. But I do think then they made the right choice. Like, abandoning him in the desert, especially after punching him out again, is extremely Indiana Jones. Like, that's very appropriate.
Yeah,
absolutely. I was just trying to figure it out. And my partner did mention the swordsman. Like, he just shoots him.
Yeah, well, but it's not quite the same.
Trying to.
Yeah, that guy was going to kill him with a sword if he got the chance.
But he's not a cold-blooded murderer exactly, you know.
Yeah,
he still has to stay just this side on the protagonist.
Yeah,
you know, the hero line. You know, if you have a spectrum from villain to hero, he needs to stay just this side on the hero side. I think.
Which Harrison Ford does that really well. I mean, obviously with Han Solo as well, he gets to play that same ride that line really close.
Right.
But which is fun. I think that's a much more engaging protagonist and hero than the super goody two shoes.
Yeah.
True. Very true. I mean, heaven knows that Dorothy became way more interesting in the rerolls version. Wizard of Oz than he was in
and
the
Tin Man. I mean, they all did. That whole crew rode that line real finely.
Yeah. That whole thing got really interesting really fast, which is why we're definitely going to be splitting those at least into maybe two episodes. I don't know if we talk about all four individually or not yet. I want to talk forever about Wizard of Oz, which is why I want to go episode by episode, but I don't know how much other people do. The sick zip line idea that Sala had.
I don't know if you heard me, Andy. Sick. Sick zipline.
Oh, I was just saying, I wish Peter had the John Rhys Davies voice. The moments where he did it, it was very entertaining. And then I think in part two, he kind of lapsed on it.
He did. And Paolo dug on him a little bit about having nostalgia for it. But no, I think it was very
good. I think he did a pretty good job.
I would love to hear you both do a solid voice. Are you up for that?
I think, maybe. Indy. I must think about my 9 children. I cannot have you come into my house. Not as good as Peter.
okay. Indy, I don't think you heard me. Sick zipline.
Oh, that was so good, Peter.
Very good.
Caleb, yours was great too. But wow. Yeah, I don't know. Like, okay, I'll give it a shot too. Indy. Sick. I said sick. Zipline.
That's good. We talked about like everyone's general role through the show about like Jaws tends to be this way and John tends to be this way, and again the same as in the last movie, like Peter really keeps up this internally meta commentary on everything they're doing as Sala, which is always really funny.
Yes. It makes me so happy. I really do love his meta commentary. Even when it's in character, it's perfect.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering if any amusement park, like I guess, is it Disney now that owns Indiana Jones? They own everything else. They must. You know, if somebody has created like a good Indiana Jones zip line, you know, theme ride, amusement park ride, that would be perfect.
It would.
I don't know like what you'd end up going through, but it would be great.
You end up going down into the pit of snakes.
There are so many facts about the movie itself, but I feel like that changes the conversation a lot, you know, because so many people have been talking. Like, I heard on a completely different podcast called Ologies, which is wonderful and you should totally check it out, that the snakes in that pit of snakes were not all actually snakes. Some of them were legless
lizards.
Yeah.
I think that's another moment that really could have changed things quite a bit. And I think a lot of times in film reroll, really these like self-control roles can make huge differences. Indy, they did role play the fear of snakes, but much like in the movie, he never fully succumbs to the fear. And what if he had failed that role? And just like, I don't know if like Sala or Marion would just like lock him out. Yeah. I imagine Jaws would have just like dragged him down there or something, but that could have really changed things.
Yeah, they would have had to actually deal with the snakes in some way to get that, which seems like a losing proposition. I mean, there was there wasn't going to be a good way to do that.
I know they
start kind of pumping gasoline or something onto the snakes to.
Jaws immediately wanted to find kerosene.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it makes sense.
Or to scrounge in the sand for some TNT.
Where are you scrounging? Well, it is a dig site.
Yeah.
I mean, she could have scrounged somewhere other than just the sand.
Yeah. I mean, I think that would have, that then would have taken more roles.
They probably didn't collect up all their things. They probably just walked away, right?
Yeah. True. I think the only other thing that I wanted, which we glanced on it, but the call out of the "it belongs in a museum" line was such a great moment of just, oh my God, you think everything belongs in a museum. As it is. I mean, I can imagine being Belloc and dealing with Indiana Jones all the time and getting so sick of that. Just like, oh my God. I thought that was a really fun call out.
Yeah. Oh, the student with the writing on her eyes. I just want to mention that. How that was a great imagery.
You think that girl has friends? Straight up crazy.
I don't know if there was a way that that could have like gone any other way in the game, but I appreciated that they at least included the scene because it's such a strange scene.
Just Peter getting so excited. Does he want to have sex with me right now?
I know.
Well, and then especially the no, I don't sleep with undergrads, and Paolo being like, that's not actually canonically correct.
Right, right.
Indiana Jones, an imperialist, and a little bit of a creep. Yeah.
And almost certainly racist, as they point out later. Yes. 1930s.
Maybe not, you know, actively racist, but definitely has a lot of that ingrained in him.
Yeah, absolutely.
Wow.
That's right. Yeah, I forgot. We did glance over some of those great. They really had fun with some of those like dumb moments, which were great.
Mm-hmm. For sure.
Something that I hadn't thought of until they brought it up better is like the fact that they have the actual medallion and have both sides of it is less relevant because the German was killed. And that was a big thing because the German had the imprint on his hand, but he was missing the other half, which is why they...
Oh my gosh, that's...
Because that was the whole thing is the German got the imprint and came back and showed them how to do it. But then the reason why they hadn't found it yet was because they only had the first half. They didn't have the take one away on the other half.
But in this one,
the Germans didn't even have the imprint at all. So they had done, that's why there was no, they had no digs in the area where the Ark actually was. Whereas I think in the movie, they're a lot closer to the dig site because they had had the 6 kadam high, but they didn't have the take one back. So they were a lot closer to finding the Ark in the movie than they were in the reroll. The Germans were nowhere near the Ark in the reroll.
Okay, mind blown. Literally, I didn't realize that was how they had the information from the medallion in the first place. I don't know how I didn't realize that.
Yeah, because there's a whole scene where he shows up at the dig site and says Heil Hitler and holds up his hand, and he has the because she threw it in the fire at one point.
Right.
Yeah. And so I hadn't thought about that. I don't even think I caught it in previous listens until I re-listened to it recently, and I was like, holy shit, that's right. Like, that's how they even had any information about where the Ark might be.
That explains so much. Yeah, they don't have any idea because that guy got killed. Never touched the medallion. Wow. Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I didn't realize that's how they knew anything in the movie itself. Like, wow, my mind is completely blown there. Thank you.
Great.
Very much. I had no idea.
Even with them going fairly off the rails in a lot of it, it's still a remarkably tight story for the reroll. Yeah. And so is the movie. The movie moves fairly quickly through all these points, and theirs does as well. So even though it took two episodes to get through it, it's not like hugely dense with a lot of
there's no
slog to it.
To really talk about, there's not a lot of lore that we have has been brought in, like from books and things like with Wizard of Oz. There's not, there's not a lot of changes to really go through. They do stick to basically just finding that Ark and getting it home. Mm-hmm. The changes that were made don't really change the plot.
Yeah, until they actually get into the chamber with the Ark, nothing really all that significant for the storyline changes, other than like the main antagonist not being
there. The antagonist, yeah.
Yeah.
And that is probably about all we can think of to say about the film rerolls Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom. No, not the Temple of Doom. Indiana Jones and the Raiders of the Lost Ark. I hope they do Temple of Doom because they could really make that one so much better. But we will talk about sequels in another episode, I think. As for now, my name is Anita, and this has also been Caleb. Caleb, would you like to give people your Twitter handle or some way to contact you or promote anything?
So I don't really have any social media, but I guess something that listeners might be interested in, I do have something that's going to be published by Steve Jackson Games, the people who published GURPS, here pretty soon. It was part of a contest to write an encounter for their game The Fantasy Trip, which was like a precursor of GURPS. So they're kickstarting a zine right now called Illuminated Manuscripts, and I've got a short article that's going to be in that. So people should check that out on Kickstarter.
That's going to be really cool. And of course, Peter.
Yes. Hello. That's me. Thank you for having me again. Yeah, I have a podcast as well. It's loosely about beer. In fact, we affectionately refer to it as the worst beer podcast ever. You could find it on any podcast thing. It's called Drink Something, Say Something. We do most of our stuff through Instagram. So at drinksomething.saysomething is the easiest way to find us.
Nice. And of course, you can always reach me at the Film Reroll Fancast at gmail.com. Thank you so much for being here, guys.
Thanks for having us.